Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Little Final Four talk. A lot of my colleagues, a lot of the sports writing world collecting in Minneapolis, getting ready for the Final Four. And I want to hit this, and if you want to weigh in, love to hear from you, rome@haveatake.com is the email, 1-800-636-8686. I was reaching out to some college basketball coaches, guys that I know from my writing days, trying to get a sense of what is the mood and what is the vibe like right now for those four teams. If you're part of that Michigan State program, if you're part of that Texas Tech surge, if you're with Virginia trying to accomplish the exact opposite of last year's debacle, if you're Auburn on what is a pretty magical ride, five seed or otherwise, and coaches tend to think like coaches, and so the guys that I was talking to via text and the phone, including one who's won an NCAA championship, talked about the pressure that coaches feel and the way that fans don't entirely grasp that. And it got me to thinking, which of those guys, very different points of the compass in their careers, which of those coaches are under the most pressure as they lose sleep, get on their staff, look at tape, and obsess over what they need to do to beat the team in front of them, whichever team advances and plays in the championship game on Monday? Tom Izzo's got that one NCAA championship already. He's had that remarkable moment where the confetti has fallen for him. He is one of a very small cluster of guys already in the Hall of Fame, still competing. The others that are in the Hall of Fame right now competing are names like Coach K, got a lot of championships. Bill Self just has the one. Cal just has the one. But for Izzo, who has the fifth most Final Fours in the history of the tournament, and who has been a perennial, I don't think overachiever is fair, but if you're like me, every year I underestimate, undervalue guys like Tom Izzo and his teams. If I could just write a state after Michigan on my bracket would be amazing right now. I got Virginia going all the way, but it's busted the rest of the way. Izzo, I apologize. But I also think there is pressure on him in a way people don't understand, because you're always going to try to rise up, especially the ambitious, at whatever's in front of you. Yes, he's accomplished. Yes, he's wealthy. Yes, his legend is set. But in the company of giants with which I think we associate him, he hasn't achieved what he should. And Izzo himself talked about the critics. And maybe it's critics, maybe it's not. It's like saying, hey, Kobe Bryant is the 10th best player of all time. He's just not the first. And people thinking you're a critic. Or saying Chris Paul is the best regular season point guard of all time. He just subtracts from the sum of all human joy in a locker room, and therefore he's never accomplished what he should in the postseason. All right, that's a critic. But I don't think it's a criticism of Izzo. I just think there's pressure on the man to live up to the ultimate greatness he's achieved outside of that, and it's something he addressed in the lead-up to the Final Four.
I'd say they're right, you know, because I need to validate it for me. I don't need to validate it for them. I have my own goals and dreams. And I have my own aspirations of what I want to do. And what I want to do is put Michigan State University in rare air. Two national championships by the same school starts to separate you from the 40-some that have won one. And three national championships for the same school validates it even more.
I love it. I love the hunger. I love the ambition. And none of us, Coach, are telling you that our perceptions should shape your destiny or your ambitions or your needs or your nightmares of not living up to what you want. That's why you're in the Final Four. That's why you're Tom Izzo. And I think a lot of the folks, certainly the coaches I reached out to, thought Izzo was the answer. I actually beg to disagree. And again, if you want to give your perspective, 1-800-636-8686 here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in what is a pretty cool moment for me personally. Forget winning an NCAA championship. This is my confetti falling. Love that I'm filling it for Jim. Very gracious of him and the guys to let me do that. I think Virginia is an interesting case study in this story of redemption. And as you know, didn't just lose to UMBC last year in the opening round. That 16-1 seed, the only time a 16 has turned a Cinderella story into a bludgeoning. UMBC destroyed Virginia, humiliated Virginia, made every ounce of Virginia's excellence under Tony Bennett, that defensive-minded grit, a joke, including every moment this year that they were near the top of the poll, when they almost the entire season flirted and were at the top, in KenPom, highly respected way to analyze college basketball, and through their entire run, had a bit of a scare, again, against the 16. I'm not going to say they got lucky against Purdue per se, but you ice a few free throws, and it's a different narrative. But Virginia forces the issue. They go to overtime. They win. They need to complete that journey to erase that stain. And on a streaming show that I host, CBS Sports HQ, pretty new network, 24-hour streaming sports network, 5 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Pacific, I do it during the week, had Kyle Guy on. And I thought he had a pretty thoughtful response to, because usually guys will just tell you, oh, we don't think about it, it's over. I don't want to answer that. I've had a few guys just hang up the phone and walk away on these kind of questions. But Guy was honest that, yeah, what happened last year, it means something.
The greatest thing about this season is we've made history because no one's ever lost to a 16 seed. That means no one's ever won after or lost after. So we have the best record ever after losing to a 16 seed. I think we keep that in the back of our mind that we did lose to them, but you know, we're just trying to move on from it, never forget it. Helps us have a chip on our shoulder and stay focused.
And that Virginia-Auburn game is really, allow me to pull from a metaphor from football, it's the Redemption Bowl. Very different ends of the spectrum of redemption. Virginia trying to make good on last year and what Kyle Guy referred to. Look, I don't know Bruce Pearl. It's not a shot at Bruce Pearl. And you talk to folks around college basketball, they'll tell you 97 out of 100 programs, coaches, if the NCAA wants to get you, if Indy puts its target on you, they're going to get you. It doesn't change the fact that Bruce Pearl, in leading this Auburn team to a Final Four in Minneapolis on Saturday, has gone further than any coach in the history of show calls penalties post that scarlet letter. His own redemption. And it's the kind that Frank Sinatra talked about. The best success, or the best revenge, excuse me, is massive success. I don't think there's pressure on Bruce Pearl for himself now, because Auburn officials and the athletic director and the boosters are saying, hell yeah, this was a good hire. Who cares about his past? Bring us the W's. But man, what a gesture. What a middle finger, if you will, to the NCAA if Pearl's cutting down those nets. If Auburn wins it all, and I think they're going to get smoked by Virginia, but if Auburn wins it all, I just want you to watch and see if Pearl just looks like mean mug someone on the floor. That'll be the NCAA official who's coming over to congratulate him. Head coach at Georgia, Tom Crean. Coach, thanks for making some time for us.
Absolutely, Bill. It's great to talk to you.
You as well. So let's start here. You have been in this situation before that Tom Izzo and Chris Beard, Tony Bennett, Bruce Pearl find themselves in. We're just discussing Tom Crean. Just the level of pressure, which guy's under the most pressure. Can you take us inside the mind, the week, the lead up for a head coach into this opportunity?
Well, it's euphoric. It really is. I mean, you're working and you're intense and you know there's pressure, but you really don't feel it because of the euphoria of knowing that you're in it. And everything, when you go through it for the first time, like three of them are, yes, you're going to prepare. Yes, you're on top of it. You're practicing. You're doing all those things. But there's so many distractions. There's so many things that come up that need your attention. But at the same time, you're in a great mood. And as it goes into it, what happens is you get into that game, and I'll never forget it. For me, we're getting ready to play Kansas. And we're getting ready to do the intros, and you know it's a big deal because you've watched it all that time. And I look across the court for me, and there's sitting Sandy Koufax. I mean, the Sandy Koufax is sitting there, and it's like I'm looking and I'm looking twice and I'm blown away. And it was like that was the aha wow moment for me. Like you just know you're caught up in a different situation. And I think what happens is you've got to do everything you can possibly do, which is almost impossible, but everything that you can possibly do to try to keep your basketball as business as usual, to try to keep your mind on the preparation, to not let yourself get out of character, because if you do, it is very easy for your team to get out of character. And when you get into that stage, it is so important that you keep doing what got you there. And what happens is the distractions of the week can carry right over into that game. And the best, this is where Tom certainly has been through it so many times and has the advantage. I remember our first time together 20 years ago when we went into St. Petersburg to play in Florida. And there's no question it's different because you get into that game and you get into that week and everything is so much more magnified. that the ones that can stay true to their team and to what it's going to take to win the game have the best opportunity, I think, once it comes.
Clones cannot wait to tell you about one of our new partners here in the jungle, Outer Known. Outer Known is a company founded by pro surfer and 11-time world champion Kelly Slater. I'm guessing anybody listening right now would agree on one thing. My man's got the look. My man looks great. So when I had an opportunity to partner up with a company that makes clothing that was founded by Kelly Slater, that was a no-brainer. I have the clothes. I broke them out at home. The wife thought that I looked cool. My kids thought that I looked awesome. Went down to Newport Beach rocking a sweater the other day. Man, I felt good and got compliments. You see, finding high-quality clothes that fit great is not always easy. Plus, this is a company with a mission to provide great clothing that does not harm the environment. Outer Known clothes are for people and planet. High quality, sustainable clothes, durable construction, and a great fit. Outer Known only works with factories that pay fair living wages and provide safe working conditions. And again, the clothing looks great and it fits great. Go to outerknown.com today, enter my code ROME at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your full price order. Once again, outerknown.com, outerknown.com. Remember to use my code name ROME at checkout and get 25% off. Check them out today, outerknown.com. Do not forget the promo code ROME, and get 25% off.
Tom Crean, Georgia Bulldogs men's basketball coach here on the Jim Rome Show with me, Bill Ryder, filling in for Jim and Coach. I don't think I've ever addressed this with you, but in that 2003 Final Four with Marquette, you guys rolled through my Missouri Tigers. I remember sitting in a bar in Des Moines, Iowa. I'm not going to lie, Coach, not liking you or your team very much. But I, you know, you do what you got, do what you got to do. What?
We had other people mad. I think Pat 40 probably wanted Missouri to win. There were a lot of Missouri alums out there that were. I didn't know you at that time, but I had friends that probably wanted to see Missouri win. That was an incredible game.
It was,
because if Ricky Pauling hits that shot at the buzzer, we lose. And we go into overtime, and I've never been a part of this. We went 10 for 10, and I know this brings up and just pours more deep salt into open wounds, but we went 10 for 10 in the overtime. Steve Novak made three threes in that overtime.
That's right.
And we won the game. And that was a really good team. Ricky Pauling, Arthur Johnson, I think Ricky Clemens, you know, Quinn Snyder coaching the team. That was a heck of a game.
Talking to Tom Crean here on the show. So Coach, based on that experience, getting to the Final Four, and Chris Beard, that Texas Tech team, and they can do a lot of things really well, but they are literally one of the best defensive teams we've ever seen, certainly in the last 20 years in college basketball. What does Chris need to do? What does Texas Tech need to do to try to overcome that advantage Tom Izzo has?
You know, I think I don't know Chris. I coached against him when he was an assistant at Texas Tech, and I was at Marquette when he was with Bob Knight. But what his team does, they are so aggressive with their hands. They are so good at getting deflections and going after balls. I think the biggest thing is they can't get into foul trouble in that game, Bill, because they have a tendency. I mean, they go after the ball. So how the game is officiated is going to have something to do with that, because they go after the post. You know, they come off the ball, they dig, they attack the ball. Mooney is one of the most underrated defenders and really the most underrated guards in the country. Everybody knows him now, but I mean, he is a high level, competitive, efficient winner. And he doesn't try to tip the ball. He tries to take the ball away from you, and he'll dive and get it. He'll reach in. He does a lot of things. I think how they play with their hands and how that game is officiated is going to have a lot to do with it, because Michigan State can have their moments where they're not shooting well from the free throw line, but if you give them a steady dose and you let them in the bonus too early, I mean, that's really going to affect Texas Tech's defense. But the other thing they do such a great job of, that's going to give any team a problem, and I'm sure Tom Izzo is staying awake at night concerned about this, their ability to switch and not get beat by that switch because of the physicality that they play with, because of the aggressiveness those guards bring to the post when they get switched off and they have to deal with it inside. That can really, really screw up your offense, especially when you run a lot of set plays like Michigan State does. So I think, again, the foul trouble, if there is foul trouble, plays into it. But I would think Texas Tech's defense and what they do with the switching and their aggressiveness on that glass gives them an enormous opportunity in that game.
Tom Crean here on the Jim Rome Show. So, Coach, best guess, Michigan State, Texas Tech, who do you think advances to that championship game on Monday?
You know, I think the winner of it, if I'm predicting, I think the winner of that game can win the whole thing, will win the whole thing. I'm always going to be biased with Michigan State because of my relationship with Michigan State and Tom Izzo. It's really hard. I think how Tom deals with that switching is going to be a huge factor. It really is, because they don't get extended. They go after the ball nonstop. Cassius Winston, it cannot be a game. Let's answer it this way. If Michigan State settles for jump shots on the switching, all right, and they don't try to attack some of the switching, I think that plays right into Texas Tech's hands.
That's interesting. Tom Crean here on the program. So, sounds like you think the winner, Michigan State, Texas Tech, wins the whole thing.
Do
you think does it seem like a certainty to you, Coach, like it does to a lot of folks, that they're beating then Virginia on Monday?
No, I don't think it's a certainty, because, I mean, Virginia can score. I mean, but I just think what's happened is you can score on Virginia as well. And I think when you look at what Texas Tech did against Gonzaga, now they did not shoot the ball that well against Michigan, and certainly they defended Michigan, and they just wore Michigan down. They just grinded them down. But they did not shoot the ball at all like they did in the Gonzaga game. And I think you can make jump shots on Virginia. I think you can score in the post on Virginia. I think you can spread them out a little bit. And you can definitely score on Auburn, although Auburn can score on anybody. I mean, Auburn would be Auburn when they're making threes. If they go in and they make any level of threes like they did last weekend, I mean, they could win the whole thing, because – they're averaging over 10 threes a game throughout the entire season. And if they're in a game where they start making 16, 17 threes, that's going to be a real issue for anybody, because they fire it so quick. But I think both Michigan State and Texas Tech would be able to score against Virginia. And I think the defense of both of those teams, to me, would really, really bother Kyle Guy. And I think it would bother Jerome as well. But I think both teams have guys that can really get up into Kyle Guy and could make it a real issue for him.
Coach, no surprise here, but news today, Ja Morant is going to declare for the NBA draft. We know Duke is going to lose their three young guys, of course, including Zion Williamson. This comes on the heels of a report from Jeff Goodman that Duke is reconsidering at least being less dependent on one-and-done players in terms of who they target in recruiting. You're trying to build something at Georgia. You've been through this several times with a lot of success. Just your personal coaching philosophy, what do you want if you could choose, if you could have the guys that you could have in terms of one-and-done talent versus players who are going to stay at a program, be there for 3 or 4 years, and grow into upperclassmen leaders?
I think you have to have balance. I really do. I don't know if it's one way or the other. Now, no one is going to pass up what Mike had at Duke this year with really all four of them. You know, when you look at Trey Jones as well. I mean, it's to put that level of talent and to be as close as they were to get into the Final Four with that group, no one's going to pass that up. But it's very, very rare that you're ever going to pull off a situation where you've got maybe three of the top four, top five picks in a draft like that. But I think that you have to have balance. You have to have some Matt Mooneys, right? If you're going to put some one-and-dones in a situation, there's got to be some Matt Mooney type guys that they're going to set the tone defensively. They're going to make open jump shots. They're going to be in a situation where they're aggressive and they're going to make plays and they don't have to have the ball to score. I think when you have one and done guys, you've got to have guys on the team that really can move and play without the ball, that can affect the game in so many different ways, that can set the tone defensively, you know, that can do those type of things. And it doesn't matter if it's a guard like a Mooney, it doesn't matter if it's a bigger guy. You've got to have somebody that has a real understanding of the game. You know, it's not just the experience that you have with the older guys. It's the understanding of how to play a style of play. It's the understanding of the speed of the game. It's the understanding of how to win a game. It's the understanding of how to finish a game. And that's really, really hard for one-and-done guys. But at the end of the day, if you don't have enough talent, well, then you don't get a chance to find out if you can win a national championship. So there's got to be a level of balance, and there's got to be a mutual respect on that team, which takes time to get built.
Coach, you've at the college level, you've coached some pretty remarkable future NBA talents, Dwayne Wade and Victor Oladipo, certainly at the top of that list. And you've been gracious enough to come on the show that I host here on CBS Sports Radio, Writer Than You, 6 to 10 Eastern. And a scary amount of time, you've been dead accurate on the projections that you've given about some of the young players that are going to make their way to the NBA draft. What do you think Zion Williamson and Ja Morant can become at the next level?
Well, Morant has got to be a situation where he's got, and I don't know the young guy, but he's got to go in. There's got to be a tremendous work ethic. There's got to be, you know, I think of Chris Dunn, a little bit bigger, and Chris Dunn was a top five, top six pick, but it's taken some time, and it hasn't really taken off. Ja Morant has got to go in and be the guy that goes in and makes his team better, right? Because the expectations, the pressure, whatever it is that you're going to get with being that high of a pick, okay, you're not totally going to play the way you did at Murray State. But at the end of the day, when you look at the way that he delivered the ball, okay, not only the way that he scored, but the way that he delivered the ball to his teammates and the fire that he played with, you got to bring that to the NBA, right? You've got to be able to bring that. If there's an unrealistic expectation of scoring, or there's a I've got to do everything type of situation, that's not going to be good. I think the most important thing for Morant is that there's other good guards with him, so that he can be a guy that penetrates, a guy that can kick, a guy that can create help to make that kick out for the open pass. I think that, and I think with Williamson, there's just so much that he's improved upon. I think when I look back at him, I don't think Mike Krzyzewski is getting nearly enough credit for the level of improvement that Zion Williamson has had. I mean, everybody points to how good they were at the beginning of the year, the win over Kentucky, all those different types of things. But what they've done with his jump shot, what they've done with his movement without the ball, what they've done with his ability to finish strong, you know, all those types of things. He was obviously really good coming in, but his fundamental skills have improved immensely. And if he can stay on that level, you know, then I think all the hype surrounding him turns out to be a reality, you know, as long as he keeps that level of work and improvement with him. And that's going to be huge in the NBA. He does not need to go to an NBA team that does not absolutely put a priority on player development. Everybody practices, right? But who's really, really putting a high a threshold, or who's putting the player development at a high threshold? That's going to be important for him in a big way.
Coach, got about 30 seconds left, but I do want to ask you about Anthony Edwards, coveted recruit. You landed at Georgia. What's the level of excitement right now with what you're building down there?
Well, I can't talk about him specifically because of the recruiting, but I think there's a lot, and I'm excited about it. We set a single-season attendance record this year, and we didn't have that good a year, right, obviously. But the excitement, the passion that Georgia has for this university that they have for athletics here, I think we got a real dose of that this year, and I think it's going to take off even more. So I love it here.
Coach Tom Crean, love having you on. Thank you for making time here on the Jim Rome Show. Continued success, and talk to you very soon.
Oh, and absolutely, and good luck to you as you guys move back into L.A. and get your family situated and adjusted, and I hope it all goes great for you.
Thank you, Tom.
When you need auto parts but you cannot get to a store, visit O'ReillyAuto.com. You can buy your parts online and pick them up in the O'Reilly Auto Parts store of your choice. No shipping costs, easy returns, and convenient pickup on your schedule. Shop your way for the parts that you need at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
But I want to start with something that I think is happening beneath the surface of the NBA that folks are not paying attention to. And for good reason. We are not about to experience an NBA playoff push of excitement. I guess a little excitement in the Eastern Conference. We're witnessing a coronation. It's exactly what we thought it was going to be the day after the Warriors completed their parade last year in Oakland. They were set up to do it again 364 days later. That's the deal, and we've seen it. And sometimes it's easy, and I've been fooled too, to be like, oh, their defensive rating down to 17. It's not going to work. Only two teams in this century have won an NBA championship and not been in the top 10 in defensive and offensive efficiency. Yeah, one of the exceptions, that Lakers team with Shaq and Kobe. Do you know what they did? Part two of the three-peat? Did not care. You know, in the regular season. You know what the Warriors are feeling? Do not care. We're basically first in the West without trying. And poor Denver the other night, a few nights ago, roll in. Game kind of means something. It's the goodbye tour at Oracle Arena. They're building a brand new, beautiful billion-dollar-plus arena in downtown San Francisco. That's a special connection between that fan base and that spot. Oh, and the officials gifted, oh, that was funny, the Timberwolves a win last weekend. So you had Steph Curry and Golden State just destroying Charlotte and then rolling home and crushing Denver. And the takeaway is this. They're going to win the whole thing. It does to those of you NBA detractors, and I'm not one of them. I love the game. I think it has a bright future. But it does lend some credence to none of this matters. These guys are too good. And they are. And just to underscore the point, throw an exclamation point, throw it in our face, Kevin Durant got himself ejected 3 minutes and 9 seconds, whatever it was, into that third quarter. And by the way, Kevin Durant, I won't dive into this too deeply now, but that guy became the wrong guy really, really quickly. It's like Dwight Howard with talent. It's like Chris Paul with a ring. I know that you're good at what you do, but you don't have to be bad to people around you. I'm pretty hard on Chris Paul. I've told the story a bunch. He deserves it. In my experience, he's not a great guy. But at least to the best of our knowledge, he says it to your face. I can speak to that. It's not these burner Twitter accounts that KD's out there feeling all the feels, up in his feelings all the time. That said, it doesn't matter. They're going to win the whole thing. But there's something percolating beneath the surface that I think is promising. And Kevin Durant's, whatever it is, whatever's going on, and I can't pretend that if I became an NBA superstar or I had, I don't know, Jim Rome's life or I were the president of the United States or whatever massive level of success in your chosen profession, I'd like to think I'd still do the things that try to have define me. I try to be a good husband. I try to be a good father. Try to work hard at my job. But I don't know, 45% chance I'd be sleeping in a gutter in Las Vegas right now and all the money is gone, maybe. So I shouldn't judge Durant too harshly. I shouldn't. That said, I think we're seeing some insight into a team that's breaking up in front of us. This is the Beatles recording Let It Be. Sorry, Beatles fans. I love the album. I think it's their best. I think it's filled with all kinds of angst. And it was the end, and they knew it was the end. And that is great for the rest of the NBA because you look around the association and the disintegration of the Warriors speaks to not just a change, but I think a reshaping of how the game is going to work and where the balance of power is. And I'll point to another example. Howard Beck, who's on the show, as I mentioned, you know, 30 minutes from now, did his survey at Bleacher Report. We talked to people around the association, and he asked the question, where would you rather be? Where would a free agent rather go? The Lakers and the Knicks or the Nets and the Clippers? Now, think about asking that question a few years ago, when the Nets were hoping to win 15 games and the Clippers went from being lob city but not playoff city in the postseason to basically a team that had Chris Paul say, see ya. Blake Griffin got traded shortly after they gave him a, we're going to make you a forever Clipper pitch to keep him there. And DeAndre Jordan was the saddest guy on the playground after being talked into coming back in a hostage situation down in Dallas a few years ago. And now the Clippers are the better organization than the Lakers, but it's the reality. I like Jeannie Buss a lot. I know Jeannie Buss enough as in a sourcing relationship to say, I think she's going to become a really impressive owner. And owners get to do their thing, get to evolve over a much longer timeline than players or even coaches because you don't have, you know, you can get old, you can age and still be the owner, and you own the place. You're not going anywhere. But the Magic Johnson debacle, I said this on the show that I host here on CBS Sports Radio, which is 6 to 10 writer than you. We like puns in the writer family, apparently. Sports writer on Twitter, sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Said a year ago, I heard that Magic wanted Luke Walton gone last year. If you remember, Jeannie Buss last February, a year and change ago, sent out a weird, cryptic tweet, I support Luke Walton. If my wife, Lori, tweets out today, I'm definitely not divorcing Bill Ryder, something's wrong in the Ryder household. I got some serious problems. Dysfunction is what defines the Lakers. I'm not even going to get into the Knicks other than to say James Dolan is the worst owner, if not on the face of the earth, certainly in this beautiful country. And yet that is the cathedral of the NBA. You walk into the Garden and it's magic. And the rare times that there are basketball games that matter, it really is, not to be too over the top, it's a transcendent deal. It also doesn't happen very often. I think Linsanity is the last time it really happened for the Knicks. Coach K broke the all-time wins record at the Garden just by sheer chance. The Clippers are supposed to be a mess. They used to be owned by, I'm not even going to say the guy's name. I'm not even going to give him that honor, that privilege on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in, by the way. And the Lakers are the purple and gold, along with Celtics green. Those are the brands that are supposed to make this thing go. The Lakers redefined not just the NBA, but the nature of sports and entertainment and that coming together long before that was a thing. The NBA is changing. The NBA is going to another place. You are going to see, and it is a confluence of events that shouldn't have happened. The CBA last negotiated was supposed to create not NFL parity, which is what you need, the nature of making fans interested and making casual fans interested. If it feels like it's a done deal, which it does in baseball, but you can at least close your eyes, squint, pretend there are eight teams, plus whichever team you root for, right, whoever your team is. In the NBA, it's one-on-one only. That's going away. That's going to change. And what struck me as a reminder of that, not just the Lakers' dysfunction, not just LeBron James on the same day he tells Howard Beck, I can still recruit major free agents that Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski, reports really dysfunctional in that Lakers front office. The fact that Shaquille O'Neal, who is a really good dude, I've seen this with my own eyes, and I hate this term, but to people beneath him, right? With the production assistant, with the kids, with the high school kids, great, great guy. But he likes to go after colleagues. He likes to go after people that are in his space, on his level. It's painful watching players only for a variety of reasons in that post-game situation. I'm a Jim Jackson fan. I actually like some of the things they've done in game. But two or three nights ago, Shaq was just beating up. Baron Davis looked like a deer. He looked like me the first time I was on the Jim Rome television show. Just eyes wide, sweating, doesn't know what to say. Only there was no Jim Rome to guide him to water. It was just Shaq beating him over the top of the head. And I think that part of Shaq's personality, the fact that there's kindness, but there's meanness, and he's going to call it like he sees it, right or wrong. I think that's why on the big podcast, you should take seriously not just what Shaq's saying, but what it means for a soon-to-be shifting NBA.
Giannis versus Shaquille.
The Greek Diesel.
Yeah, I have my thoughts. He's better.
He's better?
Yeah, he's better. He's better because he has more opportunity to showcase more. See, I was a post player, and the only thing I was allowed to showcase was my domination. But he's running the floor. I did that early. I stopped doing that because I stopped getting the ball when I ran the floor. So I turned into a half-court dominant
Plus
player.
Plus all the Annie Ann's, Papa John's, the Krispy Kremes.
and busting Dikembe Mutombo's ass in the finals.
Oh, yeah. All that stuff. Sorry, yeah.
He's better. And that's why I gave up my Superman title to him. But you know what? He works hard. He's a humble kid. He works hard. He doesn't just come and show up and expect people to say, oh, hey, I do this, I do that, I'm the next. No, this kid actually works, and he's earned it. He's deserved it, and he's earned my respect, and he deserves it, so I'm giving it to him.
Look, just because you're great at what you do doesn't mean that you're a straight shooter. Chris Paul's the phoniest athlete I've ever been around. Shaquille O'Neal, hey, Chris, it's me. Remember those interactions? I got a radio show now. I'm filling on Jim Rome. Hope you're good. Shaquille O'Neal's the opposite. And by the way, I was wrong. Shaq was belittling Dwight Howard on the air with Dwight sitting next to him once and saying he didn't get the Superman title long before I caught wind of and the rest of us caught wind of the fact that Dwight Howard subtracts from the sum of all human joy. And he does. And he's the worst. And my point is, I thought it was Shaq just not wanting to give credit to other people. Shaq knows the game. Giannis is going to be the face of the league in a few years. The Clippers, because Jerry West is the greatest front office executive, period, full stop, in the history of American sports, is going to help guide, as an advisor, that Clippers organization the way he did the Warriors. The Milwaukee Bucks are going to be legit. The Nets are suddenly a possible destination for Kyrie Irving. We'll get into why they shouldn't even do that at some other time, but the point is the NBA is shifting. Jimmy Butler's probably going to leave Philly. I think that's a better fit. Tobias Harris can get it done. Embiid and Simmons can grow into two of the best players in the game. The Sacramento Kings on the West Coast, don't mock me on this. I'm telling you, 2 or 3 years, there's the potential they can be really good. If, it's a big if, it's the Suns. If the Suns draft the right guy and they get the opportunity to do that, they're up and coming. If, it's another if, Kristaps Porzingis is healthy, you might have two of the best 10, 15 players in the NBA for a very long time. The Warriors have obscured everything. Greatness outside of Golden State, the rise of these young superstars, the idea of competition. But the thing that made their last couple championships easy, Kevin Durant, is tearing them apart from the inside, and that is a good thing for the game. Because there is a change, there is a shift coming. Shaq's talking about it as it relates to Giannis. The people talking to Howard Beck in that anonymous survey are talking about it as it relates to, oh my gosh, you're not going to believe this, Clippers and Nets, better destination than Knicks and Lakers. Luka Doncic down in Dallas, quietly putting together what's going to be a really, really bright future. What's going on in Philly? Boston is going to have an addition by subtraction in a big way when Kyrie Irving follows his own massive ego. The earth is flat, but Kyrie's ego is round and is very, very large. Out the door to somewhere else. So NBA fans, it's coming, I promise. Non-NBA fans, don't give up on the association just yet. Yeah, it's a coronation. I get it. Next year, I think it's next year, it's going to be a Game of Thrones the way it's supposed to be. There's a lot of folks who can take out a lot of others. It's going to be exciting. The one and only Howard Beck. What's up, Mr. Beck?
What's going on, Bill? The neighborhood is still in mourning. We're feeling your loss. It's just not the same in Park Slope.
I'm going to be obnoxious, Howard, but it's the only time I won't even blow up your phone with ocean photos. What is the weather like in New York right now?
Oh, see, you got it. You would have to do this to me. It's actually like sunny and semi-pleasant, I think, in like the mid-50s right now. So like by New York standards, it's shorts weather.
It is New York shorts weather. Howard Beck on the show. Howard, we've been talking a lot of the program here on the Jim Rome Show about your survey of NBA executives who see the Nets and the Clippers as better destinations than the Lakers and Clippers. Excuse me, Nets and Clippers better than the Lakers and the Knicks. Surprised by that response?
You know, it's funny. I'm not surprised at all. I was not surprised to get that kind of consensus as I talk to people because, you know, these are the kind of conversations you have informally all the time anyway. And my own impression would be somewhere along those same lines. It was just interesting to hear so many people whose jobs it is to assess this stuff every day as GMs and assistant GMs and scouts to hear that was, you know, it kind of confirmed my own suspicions. And the reason I did that exercise, of course, is that all four of those teams, both LA teams, both New York teams, all have max cap room this summer. In the case of a couple of those teams, they can get to double max. And it's the first time since the max salary was even created in 99, the first time that all four of those teams in the two glamour markets are going head-to-head for free agents with a pretty great free agent class. So this is unprecedented, and it's shaping up to be kind of a clash of the titans potentially. And yeah, the Clippers and Nets, by most people's assessment around the league, are the stronger teams if you want to win immediately as a star free agent.
And Howard, I think the Knicks, obviously, I know not a surprise to you. You covered them for a long time. You've talked to me about it on the show that I host here at night, 6 to 10 Eastern, about James Dolan and the dysfunction there. If not surprised by the Lakers, are you at least optimistic that Jeannie Buss and co. can turn that around in the next, let's call it, year or two?
I'll just say this, Bill. I'm not going to predict like where star free agents might go, right? Like there's suspicions and there's gossip and there's all that stuff we can speculate. But the reason it's hard to answer about whether Jeannie and Magic and Rob Pelinka can get this thing going in the right direction and get LeBron the kind of supporting cast he needs is because it's not completely in their hands. I think the Lakers have done a decent job of making themselves a good destination again after several bad years. This year might have gone differently if not for LeBron's injury. That's certainly the way LeBron feels about it. And everything else, you know, in terms of, you know, I do believe they need a second star, a top star, because LeBron is going to be 35 in December. And besides that, even in his prime, stars need stars. That's how this league works. But it's not completely up to the Lakers. Do I think that they'd be a good destination? Yeah. I mean, in 3 of the 10 GMs that I surveyed said they'd put the Lakers at the top because of LeBron. Several people downgraded the Lakers because of LeBron or just said, you know, they don't think guys will want to play in his shadow. But it's up to these free agents. You know, you can't, you know, all the franchise can do, all Jeannie Buss and Magic can do is make it an attractive spot and hope for the best. And the same thing with trades. You know, you could do your best to try to pry Anthony Davis loose. If the Pelicans don't want to trade him to you, you're just kind of stuck. So, you know, look, I'm sure they'll give it their best shot, and in free agency and in the trade market this summer. But as LeBron told me also in that story that ran yesterday, it's a critical summer for him. And it really is. The clock's ticking. And, you know, they burned one season. He's under contract for three more years with the Lakers. They cannot afford to have another year where they don't even make the playoffs.
Howard Beck here on the program. In your conversation with LeBron, he told you he's confident other players want to play with him. Can you give us some sense of, I'm always interested in interacting with that guy. He's a fascinating dude. What that conversation was about and whether or not you think he's right, Howard Beck.
So, I mean, look, as these things go, it was a what has now been labeled as sidling, according to Brian Curtis of The Ringer, who wrote about this. I sidled with LeBron out after the game against the Knicks a couple weeks back here in New York, walked with him on his way toward the team bus, and just said, let me throw a couple things at you here about where things are going this summer. And, look, he was very upbeat, despite the fact that he'd just gotten his shot blocked at the buzzer by Mario Hezonja and lost that game. And he was, you know, he was very optimistic. And look, this is LeBron James we're talking about. And like anybody at that level, their confidence in themselves, their ability to win, their ability to attract other winners to them is supreme. That's what he feels. And I did not sense anything in LeBron James that was tentative or overly concerned. You know, concerned with the current state of things, sure. But he sounded, as you would expect, ultimately confident. And I think, listen, I didn't ask him, do you think players want to play with you? I didn't allude to those, you know, rumblings or even the story by my colleague Rick Bucher from last December about that concept. I just asked open-ended about, you know, what do you plan to do this summer in terms of participating in the recruitment? How confident are you that you'll get somebody? And he kind of veered himself to the, I'm confident guys want to play with me, which I think was absolutely him intentionally kind of rebutting or responding to those rumblings or people's speculation that guys don't want to play with him.
Talking to Howard Beck here on the Jim Rome Show, Bill Rutter filling in for Jim Howard, senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Howard, I know how much you love hot takeism and predictions. So can I, since we're doing Jim Rome, can I do a little what if, and you bear with me here? I have just only three what ifs for you.
I thought we only did the hot take thing on your show, Rider Than You.
It transfers. It absolutely transfers.
All right, fire away.
All right. What if KD and Kyrie together decide to go and play for that New York Knicks organization that you have covered and that still has, unfortunately for Knicks fans, James Dolan as its owner? What is the success, the failure, the actual end game for a team built around those two guys, with the Knicks being that team?
It will be fascinating if it happens. It is a scenario that a lot of people around the league believe will happen. I happen to think that it's going to disappoint Knicks fans. Look, they'll be relevant again. They'll be a playoff team again. Will they be a contender? I'm not sure. And the reason is not because of KD and Kyrie, although I would put a little bit of a caveat on that. We haven't seen them play together before. We don't know what that chemistry will be like. And they're both a little bit volatile and, you know, we've seen thin-skinned. The problem is, the Knicks roster is horrendous right now, and they've got some young guys that are looking a little iffy, and if they don't actually blossom, there's just not a lot of help there. Mitchell Robinson looks great as the shot-blocking center, but Kevin Knox, really bad rookie season overall, statistically speaking, you know, just at the bottom. And then Dennis Smith Jr., a lot of doubts around the league about him. So where is the help? Where's the rest of that? Where's the supporting cast? And if you sign two max players with your two max slots, by definition, you've just capped out. So everything else is going to have to be cap exceptions and guys coming for the minimum. They would have to renounce the rights to a guy like DeAndre Jordan just to clear the room, so they can't keep him. So I don't know where the rest of that roster is. It's never enough in this league. We've seen this. It's never enough just to have two all-stars. You have to have a capable supporting cast and a veteran one at that, because youth doesn't generally win either. So, you know, I think they get back in the thick of things. They'll be relevant, but I think they might be looking at, you know, a fifth seed in the East if the rest of the top of the East stays stable.
See, Howard, you deep down, you love the what-ifs and the bold predictions. Howard Beck from Bleacher Report here on the Jim Rome Show. I'm Bill Rutter filling in. All right, bold prediction number one. Of the four teams that you put out there in your survey to NBA executives, the Clippers, the Nets, the Lakers, the Knicks, which of those teams is next an NBA champion?
Oh, wow. No, you really went there, didn't you?
I did. I'm coming with the hot stuff now. Absolutely.
It's all right. I'm gonna go by process of elimination.
Okay.
It's not the Lakers because LeBron's window is short enough that whoever they get, you still got to deal with the Warriors in the present. And by the time the Warriors really start to become vulnerable, I think LeBron will be aging out. So I think it'd be really tough unless the Lakers get like two stars immediately. So I'm gonna take the Lakers off the board. I'm going to take the Knicks off the board. I think the top of the East is looking really good right now, and for the reasons I just laid out, I don't want to contradict myself. I think that completing the roster, completing a contending-type roster around KD and Kyrie, if that's who they got, is going to be so difficult that I don't think they can pull it off, so I'll pull them off the board. And now I'm down to the two stepchildren of their markets, the Clippers and Nets. I'm leaning Clippers. I'm leaning Clippers.
I like it.
I think it's a toss-up between those two. And, you know, listen, none of these four teams may win a championship in the next 5, 10, 20 years for all we know. It's hard to win a championship in the NBA, and they tend to be hoarded by a couple of franchises in any given time span. But, you know, if we reframed it simply as who will be a contender the soonest, it should be the Lakers with LeBron, if they can get him that help immediately, because they just need one guy, and they could leap right up, you know, into contention, at least for the short term.
I love it. Howard Beck. All right, Howard, last one. You may have already answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I'm interested. How many more NBA championships, either as the primary guy or at the end of his career, he's the sixth guy and he's just there, he's Gary Payton, that thing, do you think LeBron wins before he actually retires?
Yeah, I mean, listen, once the Cavaliers deteriorated and LeBron decided, you know what, final stage of my career is going to be about living in L.A. and the business interests and his family liking it there and everything, you know, the perception around the league, fair or not, is that he shifted his priority toward other things other than winning titles, that maybe he saw that window had closed. I don't know that it's entirely closed. You know, one great off season here, they could be right back in at the Lakers, and LeBron could be right back in contention. I suspect we won't see him raising a trophy again in the NBA. I suspect that that's the case. But I would never rule it out because the guy still put up all-star or MVP caliber numbers this year. He's still an all-star. He's still one of the top players in the NBA. At any given moment, he might still be the number one player in the NBA. And after an offseason of getting himself fully healthy again, I mean, I ain't ruling him out.
Howard Beck, you're one of the folks that vote for the NBA awards, an honor that I've had in the past. Rockets are 18-4 since the All-Star game. I think most folks think now that they're healthy, they have the best shot of beating the Warriors. Are you in the group? It is Giannis's name at the top of the ballot, or are you still trying to figure out how you're going to vote?
We're going to have something that runs tomorrow on Bleacher Report where I will have my choice of the moment, but I reserve the right to still reverse myself before I file my real ballot in a week. At right now, I'm still leaning very heavily toward Giannis, and that's a couple different factors. One, the Bucks have been great from start to finish. They're probably going to get to 60 wins, best record in the NBA. And I've always said, as you know, MVP is both individual excellence and team success. You got to have both components. Harden's individual excellence is off the charts. His stats are off the charts. Their win total, the Rockets, lower because they started the season in such a massive hole that they were 14th in the West and looked like they were going to completely miss the playoffs. There was a serious concern at one point early in the season. And while Harden's numbers were fine during that stretch, he's part of that too. He's the franchise star, so you can't just ignore it. On top of all that, we know that Giannis is, you know, a terror defensively as well and can guard five positions. And the Bucks have been the number one, or by a couple points, number two defense this entire time. So if you are the linchpin of the top defense in the NBA and you're the primary offensive engine of that team and your team's going to have the most wins in the league, I think that's a pretty strong case for MVP. But like I say, I could be convinced otherwise potentially in the next week as I go deeper into the numbers.
So, Howard, there's three names. Who's number three on your ballot? It sounds like Harden's two. If it were today, because it's not like the Thunder are playing at a level that makes Paul George the candidate he used to be.
No, you know, you know, 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, Paul George was a really popular number three, and maybe some people would have even argued, oh, you could, you know, argue him in the mix with the other two. I mean, I think it's always been a two-man race this season. I don't think Paul George was ever that seriously in the running for the top two spots. Right now, I'm not sure if he's even number three. You know, you can make a case for Paul George. You could make a case for Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets. You can make a case, you know, I mean, though they've struggled a little bit too recently, Joel Embiid is somebody that at least merits consideration. Durant and Curry are hard to separate from each other, but we can't just ignore the fact that the Warriors are still the odds-on favorite to win the championship and that those two guys statistically have both had phenomenal seasons in their own right. It's just always hard to decide which of them, or do you somehow jam on both of them? It's only a five-man ballot, so, you know, you have to make hard choices. You know, there was popular support at one point for Dame Lillard to be somewhere down ballot because of everything he's done for the Blazers. I think he will get some votes in that 4-5 range.
There's so many guys.
So it's a good field.
All right, I'm gonna be reading the Bleacher Report to get the complete list. Howard Beck, my friend, I miss New York. Tell the neighborhood hi. I'll be reading you over a Bleacher Report, and very cool of you, buddy, to make some time here on the Jim Rome Show.
Always, Bill. Say hello to the South Bay for me.
You got it, buddy.
Good night now!